Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Wow, what a week. I have just loads and loads to cover with you this week. I'm going to start off with a very short little story which ties into the week's events. We are going to cover very quickly four or five subjects which have been totally lost in the relatively understandable media blast on Las Vegas. I mean, the media just, they get their teeth into something and they just don't give up. They go and go and go and repeat and repeat and repeat. And it's, they have all these talking heads on that don't know squat about squat. But I'll get into that later in the show. I'm going to finish up the show, probably the last two-thirds, last half, with Las Vegas. That tragedy down there, those poor folks. And you have heard ad infinitum on radio, on TV, or whatever you listen to, whatever you read, all sorts of stuff. I'm not going to go over the facts of the deal, of the shooter, and all that kind of stuff. What I'm going to do, and I really think it might be the best compendium, period, in media, I want to put together for you a list of assertions, clues, some facts that the media is not reporting, what the Democrats and progressive left is saying about it, all the various players that are involved, and there's many different tangents to this, which is not being discussed at all, particularly on mainstream media, because they have a dialogue they want you to listen to, right? And then I'm going to draw my conclusions from this wealth of information. I have loads of articles that I've had the producers post. There's a video right below the audio bar on the website, on therightsideradio.com. You podcast users and AM listeners can go there. And I have loads of articles which I have posted under both terror and gun control, because this involves both. And I'll show you where I'm going here later in the show. But this will be a unique perspective and will bring you up to speed on all sorts of tidbits related to this case that you have not heard, and you certainly have not heard all in one spot. The articles, by the way, are terrific. I'm not saying that all of them are completely true. Everybody has an axe to grind. But many of the articles, and I'll be referring to them when I get to that segment, have links within the article. So you can delve further into some of this peculiar, at least on the surface, mysterious, at least on the surface, event. But if you bore down, I think you'll find it's, while horrific, not peculiar, and not mysterious at all. You'll see what I'm saying. The other things I'm going to cover quickly for you today, or this morning, whatever you want to look at it. I guess it is Saturday, and I guess it is morning, so either is accurate. It are some very important things that are going on that have been lost in the Las Vegas cacophony of sound. Most of it nonsensical. We're going to talk a little bit about health care, what the Democrats' real goal is, which is single payer, and what single payer actually means to you if it occurs, i.e. if Obamacare is not repealed or block grants are not made to the state, i.e. if the rhinos like McCain and Murkowski throw the American people and their constituents in their various states under the bus, and we don't get this done. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Advisory Committee on Election Integrity that Trump set up. That's not being covered at all by the mainstream media. even though they're attending all the conferences and they get to hear all the testimony for themselves. Not a peep. Very important you understand this, because with what's happening with the Second Amendment stuff, with the Democrats gleefully rubbing their hands in some cases, and in other cases outright saying, gee, it's great that Trump supporters got shot. You'll see what I'm going to give you specifics. You can see where the alt-left is coming from. And I'll tell you the reason why they're coming from there, which, once again, nobody's bringing to you. We're going to talk a little bit about yet another company that is supporting progressive causes that needs to be, I'll leave it up to you. They're not getting my business anymore, I'll tell you that. I am going to tell you about what really happened in Puerto Rico with supplies not getting out to people who desperately, I mean, out of food, out of water, out of power, who desperately needed it, and this nonsense that the Dem progressive, politically ambitious mayor of San Juan, what was really behind the fact those supplies, which while she's complaining about support, she is standing in front of, the article is posted, you know, you'll shake your head when you find out the real reason those supplies didn't leave the docks. And then we're going to talk very briefly about North Korea, because there's been a series of events in North Korea from about September 30th to October 3rd, which have not been reported at all, or at best in a disjointed and glancing fashion, and you need to know. And then we're going to talk very briefly, I know it's a lot of subjects, about what's happening on the election front in a number of special elections and the upcoming elections, and why with Las Vegas, the Second Amendment, and part of my segment on Las Vegas, which has to do with Antifa and their associated groups, and what's really going on there. I'm going to tell you why it's important that you start sending money, you start watching, and you start protecting your rights. This is not about supporting a candidate or a party. This is about supporting American values with your time and your money. Otherwise, you will spend far more time and far more money with a lot less happiness if the Democrats manage to, I say Democrats, there are no more Democrats, if the alt-left manages to wrest control of state houses, governorships, senator seats, and congressional seats in the various special elections between now and 2018 and 2018. You just can't imagine what a wreck it will be. And one of the things I'm going to bring up in that segment on Las Vegas is who is giving huge, not little, I'm talking about huge money to the Antifa, the Revolutionary Communist Party, all of which are linked, by the way. And you will see how close we came to losing America in this election. Trust me, you will. First, let's start with a little story. So, about 200 yards from the ranch house is an alfalfa field under pivot. And it kind of sits down really cool in the folds of these little hills and draws. A beautiful field, higher mountains on either side of it, rolling contours coming down to it, and it itself has contours. And we've gotten two cuttings off that field, both great, all sold. People love the hay. And then we got a bunch of water on it, so it had a good third regrowth. We never do a third cutting. We usually leave it for fall pasture. And over the past 4 or 5 years, there's been more and more elk using this field, particularly in the month of September during the rut. And, oh, 2 or 3 nights ago, I was out trying to fill a cow tag, actually. And there were elk all around me. 4 or 5 big bulls bugling. I couldn't get a shot. The one shot that I did have was in line with the horses that we have pastured out here about a quarter of a mile away. You know, I'm not going to take a risk on that. But last night, the elk were screaming out in that field. I mean, just as loud as can be. In fact, I made a video recording of it, but I'm not smart enough to get it off my smartphone, and I'm sure as hell not smart enough to load it on this site. So one of the producers is going to help me do that so you can listen to it next week. But it was magical. And I crept out and went across the creek down by the house and snuck up the tree line on the opposite side of the field and then crossed the creek again and belly crawled kind of, I was not more than 15 feet from the field fence. And 30 to 50 feet beyond that were just elk out the yazoo, at least 100 plus head. Seven big bulls, all of them screaming at one another. Full moon. I had binoculars with me. I mean, it was almost like watching them in the daytime. It was magical. And, you know, I thought to myself about all those poor folks in Las Vegas, some of whom may have experienced something like that, most of whom I'm quite sure would have loved to experience something like that, who never will. Either because they're going to have permanent physical impairment or because they're no longer with us. And I thought about moments like that I have shared with my son and my daughter and my family and my mother, my father. And I thought about all the moments that the families of those people in Las Vegas will not get to share with them in the future. And you know, it kind of wrenches your heart. Wrenches your heart. The fact that this guy was a coward is undeniable. The fact that soft targets are the targets of choice of terrorists, and this guy was a terrorist, no matter how you slice it. When we get into that segment, I'll define that for you. Much more firmly, and I think that you'll agree after I give you the amazing number of facts, assertions, clues, etc., that I've amassed and that are also posted on the website under both terror, once again, and gun control. So, that is my story. On one hand, a story of nature at its finest, a magical moment in mystical moonlight with me and the elk and not a soul for miles. And the other, the sad conclusion that many of those people in Las Vegas will never see it or experience it or anything like it, and their families will not get to share those special moments with them. All right, let's start the show. Let's do a bullet point run of stuff that the media hasn't been talking about at all because they're obsessed with having talking heads on that don't know what they're talking about over the last week on the Las Vegas deal. First of all, let's talk about health care. A very scary poll was done. Now, listen, you got to take all polls with a grain of salt, particularly polls by left-wing organizations, because it was proven during the last election and has been proven conclusively since then that just like they have fake news, they got fake polls. They either skew the results, they slant who they poll. In other words, they poll 15% more Democrats than Republicans to get the desired result, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But nonetheless, there was a poll. And it was done by Politico, which, by the way, is a left-leaning outfit. According to them, 49% of American voters say they would support a single-payer health care system. I happen to doubt that number. I'm just giving you what the poll said. And I want you to think about that. Whether it's 35% or 49%, whatever the real percentage is, the fact that there's that many Americans who would support giving their health care, their lives, their happiness, their ability to enjoy life, to enjoy those magical moments in my little story, that they would entrust that to a federal government that has run Medicaid and Medicare into the ground, both of which lose like $70 billion to $110 billion annually just to fraud. Just to fraud. Those are facts. That they would entrust a government like that. Let's take the VA, which is really up to the time Trump signed his executive order allowing veterans to go get private care and VA will pay, was a single-payer system. I think you all are aware of the stories of people waiting for months for appointments, more than months for critical surgeries, bunches of vets dying in various hospitals here, there, and yither and yon. You didn't trust your health, your family's health, your life, really, to the government, who has demonstrated that they can't handle anything to do with health care? Look at Obamacare, for God's sakes. According to this poll, 67% of Democrats, of course, said they're in favor of having the government completely take over the healthcare system. According to this poll, that's up from 54% in April. According to this poll, 33% of Republicans said they support a single-payer healthcare system. That's really hard for me to believe. But nonetheless, understand Obamacare was designed to fail. Understand that the left, and I have talked about this innumerable occasions, they use the nudge theory. You know, the book by Cass Sunstein, who's married to the unmasking devil herself, Samantha Powers, who was Obama's regulatory czar, wrote a whole book on this, The Nudge. Just keep moving things one little increment at a time until you're so far into it, they can't get out. And that's what Obamacare was designed to do. And psychologically, whatever the real poll numbers are, there's a significant number of people from all walks, and particularly the left, who are exasperated enough with the current system, fed up enough with the purposely high rates that the system was designed to induce, that they're desperate enough or willing enough or disgusted enough to actually look at a single-payer health system. You know, everybody talks about Canada. I've talked about that ad infinitum. Put Obamacare in the search bar. You can listen to those shows. Let's talk about Britain. Okay, this is another single-payer. We all know the problems with Canada. There's a reason Canadians come across the border to get their procedures done. You know, 18-month waits to get your knee fixed is not too good. 12-month waits for a life-threatening condition treatment is not too good. Let's take a look at Britain. Let's leave Canada to the side here. So in Britain, single-payer healthcare systems, without fail, in any country in which they're employed, and that includes all the European countries and Canada, create scarcity and rationing. And the result is long wait times. Period. It's the same reason, folks, you see food lines and starvation in Venezuela. And up to a few years ago, in Cuba, and in any socialist society. So, the Red Cross, this is how bad a single-payer system is. The Red Cross recently declared that Great Britain and its single-payer system faced a, quote, humanitarian crisis, unquote, of hospital bed and doctor shortages. Two people just in the last month died at British hospitals after waiting more than 30 hours in a hospital hallway for treatment. Now, this is what you hear about. I'm sure there's more you don't hear about. You know, it's kind of the same as the VA, right? Vets dying because they couldn't get treatment. They couldn't get a provider. They couldn't get approval. They could, whatever the bureaucracy happens to be. In England, they have what's called a National Health Service Constitution. This is like the patient's Bill of Rights under a single-payer system. Quote, You have the right to drugs and treatments that have been recommended by NICE, that's the system, for use in the NHS, the National Health System, if your doctor says they are clinically appropriate for you. You have the right to expect local decisions on funding of other drugs and treatments to be made rationally following a proper consideration of the evidence. If the local NHS decides not to fund a drug or treatment you and your doctor feel would be right for you, they will explain that decision to you. Oh, gee, isn't that nice? But you have no recourse. They base all this bureaucracy on what they call comparative effectiveness studies. But look, we all know, right? We don't have to be doctors. We don't have to have an MD in front of our name to know that different drugs, different therapies, different physical therapies, different procedures, different sciences apply to all of us differently. We have different physical makeups. Some of us are strong, some weak, some fat, some thin, some tall, some short. Some women are in childbearing years. Others have had hysterectomies. You know, the same is true on the men's sexual capacity. I mean, I could listen. The differences are astronomical. There's differences in blood types and certain physical characteristics between races. In fact, there's certain genetic qualities that run down through religious hereditary lines. For instance, Jewish people are very prone to thyroid type problems called Graves' disease. I know. And it's a condition that, while anybody can get it, if you're genetically inclined, it typically hits Jewish males under 30. So there's all sorts of variances and vagaries. So comparative effectiveness in a single-payer system means if drug A is 70% effective at treating a disease and drug B is 50% effective, then your government healthcare system is going to cover drug A over drug B regardless of what your doctor recommends, regardless that medicine is not one size fits all, and regardless that you may be a person for whom, because of your genetic or physical makeup or whatever, physical history, drug B may be way better for you than drug A. Guess who's going to pay for drug B if that's the drug you need to take to fix your condition and the government says, sorry, we're not paying. You are. With no help, I might add. So, single-payer healthcare systems, folks, are like socialism. In the end, like Margaret Thatcher said, you run out of other people's money. Now, one of the things that you need to think about in America is that Bernie Sanders, who got a lot of support over on the left, thinks that a healthcare system should be single-payer. Barack Obama, who got elected twice, is a supporter of single-payer. Hillary Clinton, who fortunately did not get elected, is a supporter of single-payer. Vermont, which is the home state of Bernie Sanders, was going to institute, because of his influence, a single-payer system in Vermont. Shumlin, who's a Democrat, he's a governor there, Democratic governor, after looking at all the numbers, said, we're not doing it. Quote, the potential economic disruption and risk would be too great to small businesses, working families, and the state's economy, unquote. By the way, 3 years later, that was 4 years ago, 3 years later, California, I talked about this on a previous show, passed a single-payer health care bill to provide single-payer health care plans in California, including, by the way, to illegal aliens. The cost, $400 billion. Do they have any revenues? Zero. How are they going to do it? Raise taxes. Remember that show I did over the last 2 weeks on the relative fiscal stability of states and how people are voting with their feet? Well, there's been a huge outmigration from California and New York, as just two examples, and Illinois, any of the blue states which are having fiscal problems. So California has passed this bill with no revenues. It's going to cost them $400 billion a year. They're going to have, this is what they're planning to do. Listen to this. Lawmakers have to raise the state's payroll tax to 15%, the state payroll tax. That's on top of federal, which they hope would generate $200 billion of the $400 billion shortfall they just voted out of thin air. That's just one example. You think people are going to be voting with their feet? You bet. I wanted to bring this to your attention because this is the goal of the left. The left wants to stop Obamacare revision, repeal, you name it. And if they do, they hope that that leads to people's disgust, people's desperation, whatever the motivation is to support a single-payer system. Keep your eyes on that. And when healthcare comes up again in the United States Senate and or House, I'm going to be whipping you to a frenzy to contact not only your senators and congressmen, but all the morons who did not vote for at least the first incremental step in dismantling, forget Obamacare, dismantling the alt-left, the progressive left's diabolical chess game, their plan to institute single-payer. This is not about Obamacare. It's about getting a single-payer system. Next item, election fraud. So, you know, there's loads of press that attend every meeting of Trump's Advisory Commission on Election Integrity. You don't hear anything about it. So let me tell you that there was one held on September 12th. Not a peep in the media, even though there was a horde of reporters there. There were 10 expert witnesses that the commission listened to that day. It included election lawyers, state election officials, including Democrats, data analysts, software experts, computer scientists. Let me give you an example. So the first panel included a guy by the name of Andrew Smith from the University of New Hampshire, hardly a conservative, Kimball Brace of Election Data Services, and John Lott. Basically, the testimony was that voter ID does not depress voter turnout. Listen to this. It actually increases voter turnout because it increases the public confidence in the election results and the absolute integrity of one person, one vote. Interesting. The second panel, Donald Palmer. He was a former chief election official in two states, Florida and Virginia. So he made a bunch of recommendations, how to improve the accuracy of voter rolls, how to get states to share voter lists to stop what is happening with people voting in more than one state, which, by the way, probably cost Trump the New Hampshire electoral vote, and probably cost Ayotte, the then Republican senator, her seat in the Senate, and of course cost you and I 53 votes, which would have negated McCain rather than a different, shall we say, voting statistic. So if states share voter lists, particularly with modern computer science that can mix and match, they, quote, can identify and remove duplicate registration of citizens who are registered to vote in more than one state. Okay, there was a Justice Department lawyer. He's with Judicial Watch. This guy's, you know, a conservative. Testified about the Justice Department, particularly under Eric Holder, their failure to enforce the provisions of the National Voter Registration Act that require states to maintain the accuracy of their voter lists. Quote, a pervasive failure by state and county officials to comply with the National Voter Registration Act. Ken Block, Simpatico Software Systems, actually a lefty, his company did a comparison. between voter registration and voter history data from 21 states, and the report's available through the commission, by the way. He named states that were not furnishing voter data, mostly blue states. Gee, what a surprise. And the data, by the way, under federal law is supposed to be freely available to the public. Quote, the variability in access, quality, cost, and data provided impedes the ability to examine voter activity between states. He used instead, since he couldn't get cooperation from certain states, he used a formula that included the name, the birth date, the Social Security number, and the block, and found 8,500 voters who voted in two different states in the November 2016 election. This was just a survey of a few states. That included 200 couples who voted illegally together. He estimated that overall across the country, there would be at least 40,000 duplicate votes if the data from every state was available. That's a quote. By the way, of those duplicate voters, one of the states he looked at was Florida. 2,200 of them cast a ballot in Florida. To put this in perspective for you folks, that is four times George Bush's margin of victory in 2000. So every vote really does count, and the left knows it. The Heritage Foundation, also a right-leaning outfit, they testified on 1,071 examples of proven incidents of fraud that range from one vote to hundreds of votes. And because they have pressed it with law enforcement, they have, should we say, been instrumental in obtaining 938 criminal convictions, 43 civil penalties, and some other miscellaneous slaps on the wrist. Okay, Sean Jasper, he happens to be the Republican Speaker of the New Hampshire House of Representatives. They have a report, and I've talked about this on previous shows, that states at least 6,500 individuals in 2016 used an out-of-state driver's license to register and vote the same day under New Hampshire's same-day registration and vote laws. This is now a year later. 15% of those people now reside in New Hampshire. 15%. Take those 15% out of the 6,500. You come up with, and I'm going to round numbers, 5,500 illegal votes. To put that in perspective for you, just like the George Bush thing I gave you in Florida, right? To put that in perspective, Trump lost New Hampshire by 3,000 votes. Kelly Ayotte lost her Senate seat, and we lost a 53rd Republican senator, which might have been critical in health care and other matters, by 1,000 votes. You know, the left screams and yells about Russia interfering in our elections, and they scream and yell about strengthening the integrity of our voter system in all sorts of ways. Hell, they scream and yell about this commission that's doing the research on voter fraud and how to combat it and how to make states conform to federal law. Do you see any disgusting irony in that? I do. Next item on our bullet point list here before we get to our Vegas segment, which you will find, I guarantee you, fascinating. So guess what? It seems that Flying J, you know, that's a huge truck stop chain across the United States. Hell, some of them carry my books. Flying J is owned by the same guy who owns the Cleveland Browns. I didn't know that. And it seems that at two different Flying J stations over the last several weeks, the display of the American flag was forbidden by Flying J. And we're talking about by the store management. And corporate stood up for them and said, oh, it had to do with safety reasons. Oh, really? Huh. Well, the name of the owner, by the way, one of those, by the way, was a Rolling Vietnam Memorial. They wanted to put up flags, you know, along the periphery while they were parked there. Nope, couldn't be done. We're talking about little flags, you know, the 6-inch flags that you put in the grass. Okay. So, Flying J is trying to get out of this, you know, trying to say, well, that's not really what we intended, and it's really for safety, and it's really for that, and it's really for this. But Jimmy Haslam, that's Haslam, Jimmy Haslam owns Flying J, and he owns the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, if you really want to see what's going on, you take a look at the Cleveland Browns kneeling, ignoring, and sitting during the anthem. And you look at his statements supporting those actions. Jimmy Haslam is obviously a progressive with a lot of money. And my suggestion is, by the way, Flying J is also the pilot stations. So you got the pilot gas stations, the Flying J gas stations, truck stops, etc. And you got the Cleveland Browns. I'll leave it up to you how you would like to show Jimmy Haslam what you think of his politics or what you think of his injection into politics into commerce or sports. Now we're going to move to Puerto Rico. So the mayor of Puerto Rico and I'm sorry about that. Once again, I've forgot to turn off the studio phones here, which I'm going to do right now. Okay. At least that phone won't bother us anymore. So the mayor of San Juan in Puerto Rico, she does a video standing in front of crates and crates and crates and crates of federal supplies for her beleaguered city and territory, and complains about how the federal government isn't doing enough and this stuff is not getting out to folks. Now, I don't need to tell you that standing in front of crates and crates and crates and pallets and pallets and pallets of supplies, gathering dust on the dock, is kind of antithesis to what she was trying to say. But it comes to find out that the reason they didn't get off the docks has nothing to do with FEMA, has nothing to do with the federal government, and in fact has nothing to do with the military. It seems that this gal, who's a progressive leftist, is also a huge supporter of the Trucksters Union, the trucking union in Puerto Rico, the Teamsters. And it seems that the Teamsters, taking orders from the National Union, said that they wanted certain hours that they would and would not work, despite this being a catastrophe, and they wanted certain rates of pay because their job was so much more difficult, you know, getting supplies out to people who were starving or didn't have any water. And the mayor, supported the union's attempt to extort more money and extort more conditions to go out and deliver supplies to their fellow Americans. So that's what really happened in Puerto Rico. And, of course, you don't hear the mainstream media talking about that whatsoever, do you? Not at all. As a little background, only 20% of the Teamsters Union drivers arrived to deliver supplies because their demands had not been met. The guy who was in charge at that time, they've now elevated up to general, and this guy is still in charge and very good, very accomplished. His name is Colonel Michael A. Valley. They call him Torch. He's the commander of the 101st Air and Space Operations Group and director of the Joint Air Component Coordination Element, 1st Air Force. He was primarily responsible for the Hurricane Maria relief efforts. Let me give you his take on this nonsense. They have the generators, water, food, medicine, and fuel on the ground, yet the supplies are not moving across the island as quickly as needed. It is a lack of drivers for the transport trucks, the 18-wheelers. Supplies we have, trucks we have. There are ships full of supplies backed up in the ports waiting to have a vehicle to unload into. However, only 20% of the truck drivers show up to work. These are private citizens in Puerto Rico, union employees paid by companies that are contracted by the government. So, folks, that's the real deal in Puerto Rico, which no other source has brought to you. So the next thing we're going to talk about is North Korea, because other than a drib and a drab here and there, it's kind of fallen off the face of the news earth. So over in a four-day period, from about September 29th to about October 2nd or 3rd, obviously overshadowed by the October 1 incredible mess in Las Vegas, here's what happened. On Sunday, okay, Kim baby over there threatens to shoot down planes. The Pentagon flies B-1 bombers and F-15 fighter jets along North Korea's eastern coastline, which is the closest that they've flown to the North Korean mainland in the 21st century. Then North Korea's foreign minister says Trump has, quote-unquote, declared war, unquote. And, quote, we have the right to shoot down U.S. strategic bombers even when they are not inside the airspace border of our country, unquote. In response, the U.S. sends more aircraft to the region and does more flights. And then just a few days ago, North Korea sends all sorts of anti-aircraft, missiles, et cetera, to the East Coast and releases a video, a propaganda video, in which it's blowing up U.S. aircraft and warships. And then yesterday, and the press is all a tizzy over it, Trump has a dinner with top military people. Afterwards, he has an impromptu press conference. One of the reporters asked him, well, what did you discuss? And he says, you know, this is the calm before the storm. And they said, what do you mean by that? He goes, you'll see. And, of course, the media is all abuzz over what this means, and there's like 50 different opinions and all sorts of crap. So keep your eye on North Korea. Remember, the Vietnam War started with an incident in the Gulf of Tonkin. The Spanish-American War began with the mysterious sinking of the USS Maine in Havana Harbor. It doesn't take much, folks. It doesn't take much. Which brings us to our last kind of mini, bringing you up to speed on what you haven't heard this week segment, which is special elections. Now, this week, because of all the articles that I had the producers post under terror and gun control, which is where all the Las Vegas-related articles have been put, and we're going to be getting that segment, like, literally in a minute or two. I did not have posted a lot of stuff under the politics section, which I have been posting previous weeks. So, what was not reported by either the left wing or the right wing, right, is that after the Alabama vote, where the Republicans won in a special election, there's been two elections just this last week that the Democrats won. And that does not bode well. One special election a week ago Tuesday, or this last Tuesday, excuse me, was in House districts, that is the state legislature, in Oklahoma and New Hampshire. Both of these districts, this is very interesting, had gone for Trump by double digits in November 2016. And this, by the way, is all based on some numbers that were crunched by Daily Kos, that's KOS, elections. But both went for the Democrats by double digits this week. 17-point Trump win in New Hampshire became a 12-point win for a Democrat by the name of Charles St. Clair. And in Oklahoma, an 11-point for Trump district became a 20-point win for a Democrat by the name of Jacob Rosenkranz. So you need to get on the stick, people. Now, obviously, none of us can follow every state House, state Senate race in the country. This is local politics. You know, mayoralities of smaller, mid-sized towns, city council, school boards. This is the trenches of politics. And if you don't control the trenches, you can't control the battlefield. So people need to get on the stick. You need to realize that there is a monumental tussle going on in the political arena for the heart and soul of America, and how she's going to be governed and by whom. And there's also a monumental struggle going on between ideologies, and we're going to get into that here beginning right now with what you haven't heard, or what you haven't heard all put together about Las Vegas. So, let's start Las Vegas. Let's start Las Vegas with what some of the folks on the left had to say about Las Vegas. You've probably heard about the CBS senior attorney who, a gal, tweeted out and Facebooked, etc., that the people that were killed were probably all Republicans, so good riddance. I'm paraphrasing. Actually, what she said was worse. And CBS, which actually amazes me, fired her on the spot. And then you might have heard... You might have heard about this professor. His name is George Sicariello. He's a professor at Drexel University. And what he said, that white supremacist patriarchy was to blame for the mass shooting. This is the same guy who late in 2016, right before Christmas, tweeted out that all I want for Christmas is white genocide, unquote. So this last Monday, he says, quote, it's the white supremacist patriarchy, stupid, but liberals will drown out all discourse with a deafening choir screeching gun control. Anyway, I think you get the point. He went on to say, by the way, in his rant on Monday, that white victimization is really Trumpism. And, quote, yesterday, that's Las Vegas Sunday, yesterday was a morbid symptom of what happens to those who believe they deserve to own the world when they also think it is being stolen from them. Now, how he interpolates the Stephen Padgett guy with white supremacy and then links it all to Trump, that it's kind of a, should we say it's a Lego set too far? I don't get it, but I think you get the gist, and that is we brought it on ourselves and we deserve it. How's that? There was another gentleman, Paul Joseph Watson. Quote, this was a tweet. I hope they killed more than 25 Trump supporters, LOL. Oh, my. Then there was another one. Quote, if the shooter was Muslim, we'd call this a terrorist attack. This was a terrorist attack committed by a 64-year-old white American. That was Piers Morgan, by the way. Then we have a teacher. She actually teaches. She might be teaching your kids. What a scary thought that is, right? Her Twitter name was Anne. And hashtag the resistance. Quote, lots of white Trump supporters in Las Vegas at Route 21 watching Jason Aldean. Pray only the Trump-tards died. I mean, this is a lady who's teaching your kids, folks. A lady who's teaching your kids. And then there was another Twitter user. Here was his tweet. Shooting a country music festival in Las Vegas? Question mark. Looks like revenge on those Trump supporters. Now, I don't need to tell you, and listen, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more that I know of. There's probably thousands and thousands, maybe tens of thousands that, you know, you can't track that you don't know of. But let me step back, because as I go through this compendium of Las Vegas facts, factoids, tidbits, stuff we know we don't know, and put it all together for you, which I think actually you'll be able to put together quite easily for yourself as I get further into the segment. What these tweets indicate is a mentality. It indicates, and I have talked about this ad infinitum on this show, a loathing, disregard, disrespect, and contempt, a arrogant contempt for middle America, red states America, Mr. and Mrs. America, you know, Bubba. It is contemptuous. Think about these people who are Americans, or call themselves Americans, applauding, or alternatively, applauding de facto by showing no remorse for the fact that scores of Americans, many of them younger, 20s, 30s, with their whole life ahead of them, regardless of their beliefs, regardless of their skin color, their religion, who cares? They're Americans. Their lives were snuffed out. And hundreds more than 500 were injured. Many of them, you know, with injuries that will affect their entire lives and their ability to live those lives and their ability to enjoy moments and their loved ones' ability to enjoy moments with them, like I described in my little magical moonlight elk story at the beginning of this show. What this symbolizes is not some weirdos, folks. This symbolizes the ingrained belief system of the left. And I don't mean the ingrained belief system of liberals, whom I differentiate from, quote-unquote, the left, the alt-left, and the progressives. The progressives, of course, being communists. We're going to get into that during this talk in Las Vegas, too, because I have some absolutely mind-blowing information for you on this. If you think about people, bear with me here. If you think about people who hold their fellow countrymen in such contempt that their death or serious injury, that the feelings and lives of the people who were directly affected, in other words, shot, that they have no feelings, that their view of this horrific event, rather than being on human terms, is in ideological terms, I think you begin to understand what might be a motive for this Stephen guy, coward that he is, for pulling this off. Let me keep going. It will also, by the way, substantiate what I have always said, which is ideology first, country a distant third, and the rest of the people in the country who don't follow your ideology, if you happen to be left, progressive, all left. Ideology first. Everything else is secondary, even human suffering. And you know, that, folks, is that was the ideology of Hitler and Stalin and Mao. And as I will show you here this morning, that happens to be the same ideologies espoused by some of the people who, in my opinion, were related directly or indirectly with Las Vegas. All right. At the end of this segment, I'm going to tell you about Antifa, their linkage to other alt-left outfits such as the SDS. Remember the Students for a Democratic Society? Bill Ayers, the bomber. Bernadine Dorn, his wife, the bomber. Their living room being where Barack Obama launched his political career for state senate in Chicago. Well, the SDS is back, folks. And they have linked arms with outfits called the Communist Revolutionary Party, Antifa, and others, which I'm going to tell you about. And let me tell you about their funding. This is not a joke now. This is not the tentative steps to birth this movement, which was Occupy Wall Street, which kind of fell down miserably. These people have come back at us in several different forms under several different names since the Occupy Wall Street movement, by the way, which had the same backers as the movements I'm going to tell you about tonight. Now, I have talked about the unholy alliance of the alt-left and radical Islam. In fact, I talk about it extensively, and as time goes on, I was convinced I was right to begin with. Now I am solidified in that belief. And this Las Vegas event, as I'm going to demonstrate to you this morning, or as, forget me demonstrating to you, as the facts I'm going to give you, some of them may be only half facts. I'm going to tell you right now. Some of them surmises of third parties, not mine. Some of them absolute facts. Some of them huge clues. All of them in these articles I have posted under terror and under gun control. And all of them, or many of them at least, which have links within the articles that if you want to learn more, you should click on, which will bring you to still other articles. I mean, there is a wealth of information out there on the forces which created Las Vegas, the forces which molded the mind of Stephen Paget, and the forces which precipitated, quite purposefully, the Las Vegas tragedy. I'm not going to even call it a massacre. It's tragedy. First of all, let's start at the beginning. Think about the government that we are getting our information from. Number one, we have a sheriff. And I'm not saying that any of these people are bad people. But I think that when you get information from someone, whether it's me, Sally Lou, the man in the moon, Bubba, or that crazy professor that I just told you about with his white supremacist, Trump victimization, whatever his weird mind has conjured up, you should always consider the belief system of the people who are giving you information. So, let's think about where we're getting most of our information, quote-unquote, official information right now. Number one, we're getting it from a sheriff who is obviously distraught over what happened in his jurisdiction. I mean, the guy is sincere. But his jurisdiction is Las Vegas, which is, number one, a liberal town, and number two, a sanctuary city. Now, a sheriff of a sanctuary city, by definition, is going against his oath to uphold the laws of the United States, period. So, this guy has some kind of leaning, some kind of empathy for selective breach of the law, and he has some type of left-leaning philosophy. And I have no idea. I haven't researched it. He may be right as hell on national defense and fiscal. I don't know. But on the social aspects, the very fact that he is sheriff of a sanctuary city tells you something. The FBI is another source of information. Let's see. This is the FBI that was run by Comey, with FBI special agents appointed by Comey during his reign, telling us what they know and what they don't know and what they can't tell us, and the investigations ongoing and all the nonsense that they use. This is the FBI that has been riddled with leaks. This is the FBI that was run by a guy who committed a felonious leak himself after being fired, i.e. leaking his conversations with the President of the United States to a buddy of his who also happens to be a professor, who then leaked it to the New York Times. This is the FBI who did not indict Hillary Clinton. This is the FBI who flat out lied to us about whether or not there were any documents or documentation of or transcripts of the infamous tarmac meeting between Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch. They said there weren't, and suddenly there were 413 pages, including from Comey himself. This is the FBI who, along with the CIA, under John Brennan, who I think is, you know, treason trial material, who developed the, who I don't want to say developed, who fostered the development of, who used the development of, and in fact employed the development of that fake dossier on Trump, you know, the golden whatever, the golden shower, where supposedly Trump, in a Russian hotel that he's never been to, in a room he's never stayed in, hired five prostitutes to pee on the bed because that's where Barack Obama slept once. I mean, just unbelievable. This is the dossier that was paid for by the Democratic National Committee. This is the dossier that the FBI, who now wants us to believe them in what they know, don't know, can't tell us in the Las Vegas matter, tried to pay the developer of $50,000 to do more work, even though they knew it was fake. That was our friend Comey, by the way. This is the FBI who spawned the gentleman by the name of Robert Mueller, who is now the special counsel, who, after months and months, obviously can find no collusion between Trump and the Russians. So he's off looking at this, that, and the other, like financial records from 10 years ago, trying to find something, anything. He even interviewed, you know, everything comes full circle in the swamp. He even interviewed the guy who was the main author of the completely fake, absolutely made up fairy tale fantasy land dossier I was just talking about. I mean, it's really pretty amazing. You know, this is the FBI that pardoned all 17 key witnesses in the Clinton matter. This is the FBI that had already drafted a memo months before they interviewed Hillary Clinton, not even under oath, exonerating her for her many, many, many blatant black and white crimes. Now this FBI wants us to believe that all sorts of things about Las Vegas. He acted alone. There was only one shooter. There were no accomplices. They don't know of any motive. So on and so forth. The sheriff, to his credit, has at least admitted that there was an accomplice, or that he believes that it could not have been done without an accomplice of some type. What else are our sources on this? Oh yeah, that's right, the mainstream media. Now, the mainstream media has been complicit in hiding Islamic links to terrorism. They have been complicit in completely subordinating any news about leftist violence, particularly when it comes to mass shootings. You know, of all the mass shootings, and I'm not talking about the kids at Columbine, and I'm not talking about folks who were in some type of domestic dispute and unfortunately killed five family members. I'm talking about the famous events of terror. Can you tell me one time that the press, with just a few exceptions, has beat the drums on the fact this was Islamic terrorism, or this was terrorism by a leftist, or this was terrorism by an Obama supporter or a Hillary supporter? None. Zero. Nada. So those are our three main sources of information. The state government, county government, sheriff of a sanctuary city, an FBI that has been totally corrupted, very unfortunately for us and for America, by a corrupt FBI administration, put in place by a corrupt executive level administration, i.e. Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder, and Barack Obama. And these are our sources of information. Think about some of the things that we've been told. Bear with me on this. Okay, first we were told that there was no one else, period. There's just no one else involved. Then we learn through other sources that, yes, there was somebody else involved. There was a woman that he was with. Then we were told that there's no proof. They went from there wasn't anybody involved to there's no proof. Now, anybody who's been to Las Vegas, folks, know that there is 1,000,001 surveillance cameras. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's surveillance cameras in the boys can and the girls can. You can't tell me that this guy was out, as the information has now come out, was out gambling for 8 hours a day during the 4 days he was setting up this deal and carrying weapons up to his room, either with or without help, with some babe perched on his arm. And there's no proof, there's no video, there's no nothing. And our information sources, the county, the state, the FBI, they didn't know there was video of these people? Really? This came out, by the way, when there was a tweet. Somebody got a hold of the people who provided room service to this guy's room, to Padgett's room. And the room service bill showed two. In other words, it showed guests, two guests, not one. The actual bill showed two dinners, not one. Two Coca-Colas, not one. The article and the tweet and the copy of the bill is posted. I'm sorry, I can't tell you whether it's the terror or the gun control, but it's under one of those headings. Only when that came out, then suddenly the powers that be, the powers whom we are supposed to trust to give us up-to-date, accurate, complete information, they do work for us, you know, not for themselves. When that came out, suddenly, oh, yeah, there might have been a gal, blah, 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 blah. Then there was the delay on the girlfriend getting back from the Philippines. And all this stuff links into where I'm going in this segment with other facts you haven't heard. So there was this delay in the girlfriend coming back from the Philippines. What was that about? You're telling me that the United States government couldn't have had the Philippines government round her up and have her on a plane in hours? She comes back instead 4 or 5, whatever it was, days later, and is whisked away to an interrogation with our very own FBI. And then from that interrogation, we're told there was nothing to be learned. She didn't know anything. And, oh, yeah, by the way, she did mention that, you know, he was having very uncomfortable sleeps, and he was waking up shouting out and acting a little strangely. Which, by the way, is a contradiction to what her attorney said, which was he was a kind, gentle, and stable man. Then we have, and you can see it right in the video. I mean, I don't know who was thinking about this when they released their little press photos of the room from which the shooting purportedly emanated. But there's an obvious piece of yellow paper, it's right in the video, on a table. We were originally told, you can go back and listen, you can go back and take a look at the original press releases. He didn't leave any note. He didn't leave any information. Suddenly, when they do their own video and somebody realizes that there's a piece of yellow paper in it, and the blogosphere explodes, they go, oh yeah, there was a note. And that's all they say. The sheriff says it wasn't a suicide note. So what was that note? Why is that note being withheld from us? You're telling me this is the killer? He wrote a note? And there's no information in that note? There's no clues in that note? Why don't we know about that? Why was it denied to begin with until their own video kind of outed them? There's another thing you can look at in the pictures. By the way, all this stuff is posted in these articles. I mean, it is a compendium of information. I don't think there's anything else like it, either on the web, and certainly not in media. It is a compendium of information. In fact, if you count the links in the articles I've had the producers post under both terror and gun control, If you count the links that are within those articles, there's probably 500 sources of information at your disposal on the website this week. You can sleuth this to your heart's degree. You can decide whether I am crazy. You can decide what of this information you believe, don't believe, half believe, has credibility, bears watching, should be ignored. You guys are smart folks. Make up your own minds on this. But the information is there for you in one place, and nobody else has done that for you. And the information is all there because I spent many, many, many hours this week. Because I got to tell you, and my instincts, as those of you who have been listening to me for years, and there's more and more and more of you in that category, I think our cumulative was up to 1.3 something million last weekend. As more and more people listen for a longer and longer time to me, I think you'll agree, and I'm not patting myself on the back because I wish I was wrong on more than half this stuff. My instincts are really good. When I connect dots for you and give you my analysis of those dots and tell you how I connect them, you're always free to connect them yourselves or not connect them as you wish. You know, we're all grown-ups. You can make up your own mind. My job is to bring you information that nobody else brings you and to give you those dots. And then I think it's my responsibility to tell you what I think the dots mean. You can take it, leave it, or think I'm crazy. So, in another one of the pictures, this is the official pictures now. The official pictures released by the FBI and the Sheriff's Department, you know, those people that were supposed to trust in this information. Let me do some simple math for you. There were roughly 570 people shot. I mean, some of that 570, once again, they won't give us the information. I wonder why. Some of the 570 might have been injured in some other way. They might have been trampled. They might have fallen over a fence. They might have slipped and broken their leg. I don't know. And since we're not being given the information as to how many of the 570, I'm rounding numbers, poor folks got hurt in this deal. And of those 570, 58 died. I'm just going to go with the 570 number. Let's assume that every one of those 570 was in one way, shape, or form hit by a bullet. Having had some experience in this, which is all I'll say, I will tell you that, number one, shooting an automatic weapon, or in this case, a semi-automatic weapon with an accessory that made it act like an automatic weapon, that is this bump stock thing, is not an accurate weapon. You know, one of the most famous automatic handheld weapons of World War II was a Thompson 45 caliber submachine gun. And when you're shooting a caliber like that, or modern calibers which may throw a lighter bullet but pack more powder, that is more charge, more velocity, more FPS at the muzzle, that's foot-pounds per second at the muzzle. As you pull the trigger and rounds are going out of the barrel, boom, 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 that barrel rises. And you're taught to shoot in bursts, anywhere from 3 to 5 shells. Because by the time you get done with the third shell, or fifth shell, in the fraction of a second it takes for those shells to fire, the muzzle of your gun is inches higher, at least, than it was when you first pulled the trigger. And for those of you who are not familiar with firearms, an inch at the place, at the point you pull the trigger, in other words, where the gun is, 300 yards away is many, many inches. If the muzzle of that gun moves an inch when you pull the trigger, that bullet can be 6 to 12 inches depending upon the caliber and a number of other factors off target at 300 yards. So this automatic weapons fire, if you will, which, by the way, when this was happening on Sunday, you know, the press, these are people that are talking about gun control and they're attempting to sound intelligent. These people don't know anything. They don't know anything about firearms, ammunition, ranges, velocity, grams in certain types of bullets, penetration. They don't know squat. It's pathetic. Yet they're trying to come off as experts. Anyway, let me get back to where I was going with this. If you had 570 people that were touched by a bullet, some people, unfortunately, fatally, other people wounded, that means given an automatic weapon type firing sequence, in other words, full automatic from a semi-automatic rifle, probably one in three or one in four bullets that you fired found a mark. Probably, and remember, the perp's point of fire, should we say perp number one, and I'll get to that in just a moment. Perp number one, this Steven guy, he was almost 400 yards from the center of his target, which was the concert grounds. 400 yards. Somewhere in the information we've been given, one of the authorities slipped and said that the primary round that he was using was a .223. A .223 is a light, very fast bullet that loses much of its energy at over 300 yards and dramatically loses energy at 400 yards and beyond, making it even less accurate and making it even less capable of doing damage. So this guy would have had to fire unless, you know, the dark angels were with him. He would have had to have fired somewhere between 3 and 5 times more shells than 570 to affect 570 casualties. Are you following me? Take a look at those photos that are in those articles. I think the titles will tell you which ones have the photos. And what you'll see is two things. Number one, you'll see these semi-automatic weapons with the bump stocks on them. Number two, you'll see that in different photos, what appears to be the same weapon is in a different photo in a different location. Now, that kind of makes me wonder. I mean, this guy didn't go out and buy from the other information that our quote-unquote trusted information sources have given us. He didn't go out and buy 10 of this exact same type of semi-automatic weapon. He bought weapons, by the way, beginning last October. Remember that. Last October, October 2016. He bought weapons in four different states of various types, although many had the same caliber, the .223. The second thing you'll notice in those photos, take a look at them for yourself, is shell casings. Because, you know, when you fire a gun, there is a spent shell. And if you're firing a semi-automatic weapon, you have to pull the trigger each time you fire, or an automatic weapon, or a semi-automatic weapon that with accessories is firing like an automatic, like this guy did with the bump stocks, you're ejecting literally hundreds of shells per minute. So for this guy to single-handedly have affected 570 casualties, there should be at least 570 shells, and that's if the Dark Angels were with him and every bullet that came out of the muzzle of his guns found a mark. But more likely, there should be somewhere between 2,000 and 2,500 expended shell casings in that room. Now, listen, you know, at my advanced age and being a poor old hayseed always squinting into the sun, maybe I just can't see them. But I don't count more than a couple dozen shells on the carpet around those guns. Why is it that our trusted information sources have not told us how many shells they recovered from room 135 at the Mandalay Bay, which they say is the only scene of action with the only shooter? This would be kind of elementary sleuthing, and it is not information that would seem to put the rest of the investigation at risk, which is the excuse they use to not tell us other stuff. If you remember, when we first heard about this, the authorities that we're supposed to believe were telling us that there were 10 weapons. Suddenly, like a day later, there were 27 weapons. Now, I don't doubt that this guy had 50 weapons in his Reno home, in his Texas home, his Mesquite Texas home, and up in this room. I don't doubt it for a minute. And I'll tell you why here as we go further into the segment. But I'm really suspicious. I mean, I got red flags flying all over the place on this story. Something is not right, my listeners. Something is really, really, really off about this whole deal. And the more misinformation we're given, the more we're given information which is then contradicted and then, should we say, massaged so that it wasn't really a lie when they first said it and they have kind of an out, the higher those flags fly, the bigger the flags, and the more flapping they are doing in the winds of doubt in my mind. Now, I just gave you two facts. There had to be at least 570 shell casings. More likely, and I know this from experience, there should have been about 2,000 to 2,500 shell casings in that room. If this guy was the only shooter, and if every casualty came from one of his weapons, as the authorities were supposed to trust tell us. By the way, when you're firing an automatic weapon, those shells are, the more you fire it, the hotter the weapon becomes. In fact, some of them can get up to 400 degrees centigrade. I mean, that is, like, you touch it, you'll have third degree burns. And the shells that are being ejected are at the same temperature. You'll notice in those photos, once again, these are the official photos, that there's a carpet. Do you know what happens when a hot piece of metal hits the nylon or other synthetic material in a carpet? Bad stuff to the carpet. Take a look at those photos. Once again, maybe it's just this poor old Hayseed's eyes, but, you know, I don't see a bunch of burn marks. I don't see a bunch of staining of that carpet from heat and powder and all the stuff that goes along with it. And I sure as hell don't see 570 shells, much less 2,000 or 2,500. Now, we're told that Paget started buying, that he had had guns before, but that he started buying guns in October. Now, one of the things that the people we're supposed to trust to give us information have not told us is when he bought the guns. I mean, it's been very generic. I would bet, I have no information on this whatsoever, I would bet that his first gun purchase was after October 15th, 2016, when there began to be a chance, if you go back and look at the polls, that Donald Trump might win the presidency. And I would bet you again that after the election, in other words, after November 4th, 2016, and up until January, February, March, is when the bulk of these weapons were purchased, after Donald Trump was elected president. And I would bet you that of that bulk of guns that were purchased, the purchases accelerated after Donald Trump's inauguration on January 20th. But the authorities are not sharing that with us. Now, in their defense, that could affect their investigation, because obviously they have to go out to all these various places in four states. You know, this was so premeditated, people. Completely premeditated. This guy was planning this event since somewhere around late October, early November 2016, i.e. the election of Donald Trump. And you've heard all the other things that he's done on mainstream media. You know, the selection of the rooms and the angle fire and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, the stuff, the bomb stuff in the car and, you know, the extra rounds of ammunition and setting up the shooting platforms and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to go into it. I think you know that it was highly premeditated over a long period of time. I would be fascinated to know when these guns were purchased, beginning with that purchase in October of 2016. Fascinated to know. Because it leads me even more strongly in my hypothesis, which I'm going to be sharing with you. Then we have people that are close to him saying they didn't know anything about this, or at least were being told by them, and by the authorities we're supposed to trust, that these people didn't know any. They didn't know he had 50 guns. They didn't know he liked guns. he was a nice, kind guy. I want you to think to yourself, if you are living with someone, if you are a sibling of someone, and they have 50 weapons, particularly of this type, and they have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of rounds of ammunition, and they have all the gear that goes with all that gear, you don't know anything about this? This is a surprise to you? Yeah, you know, those red flags are just flapping in the breeze, I gotta tell you. There are articles down below. There are articles down below which talk about the fact that this guy was a pilot with two planes. Now, that can lead you in a lot of different directions. I'm not going to go in any of them. But you'll see in one of the articles, and it is well documented, be sure and click on the additional links within the article, that one of the planes in 2014 supposedly switched owners. Let me see if I have the information right here. One of the planes switched owners. And the new owner... Where is that article? Here we go. So Paddock... Sorry, I called him Paget. So Paddock... He owned a plane, which was a Cirrus SR-20. And the registration number of that plane was N5343M. You know, just like a car has a VIN number, planes have their numbers, to give you an analogy. That plane left Paddock's control in 2014 and went to a company by the name of Volant, V-O-L-A-N-T, LLC, which seems to be associated with another Volant, Volant Associates, who happens to be a Department of Defense contractor. And that plane is currently in Virginia. And its logs show that it's active. However, the FAA, who is supposed to keep track of every flight by every plane, no matter who owns it, the FAA doesn't have any records of its use after 2014. Don't you find that odd? I mean, maybe it's just a coincidence, although I don't believe in coincidences. By the way, you can verify all this on flightaware.com. That's flightaware, one word, .com. So we have a plane that this guy owned that is now owned by a defense contractor who, by the way, on its website says, quote, "The industry's preeminent professionals to discriminating U.S. government and intelligence and defense industry customers." That's its own website. That is listed as active, on which the FAA has no flight records. Just one little tidbit for you. Let me give you another tidbit. The response time of the police. First of all, there was a story that the FBI was in on the response to the room. And then suddenly that story disappeared. Did you notice that? And then we were told how quickly the response time by the police was. 11 minutes, I believe, was the original deal. You can go back and listen to, you know, just call up the mainstream media videos and you can see what they were saying. I believe it was 11 minutes. And then we find out that actually the room wasn't breached for 72 minutes. And that the original cops, we'll call it the 11-minute squad, were told to stand down. We were then told that the FBI shot the guy. Then we were told that the police shot the guy. And finally we were told that the guy committed suicide. We were first told that the shooting went on for 20 to 22 minutes. We were then told that the shooting went on for 26 to 28 minutes. And finally, we're being told that the shooting, off and on, including a long break when the guy evidently raked a couple hundred rounds around the room and down the hall because of the security guard who was a hero in this deal, By the way, where are those 200 shell casings? Something happened, folks, between what is now the official story, changed from previous stories, that the guy stopped shooting at 9 minutes or 8 minutes, whatever the current story is. I mean, it doesn't do me any good to tell you exactly what minute they're saying because it changes. So the guy started shooting at the end of 8 minutes, which, by the way, these bump stock converted, they're not really conversions, they're accessorized. These bump stock accessorized semi-automatic weapons, accessorized to act as automatic weapons, fire somewhere around 300 to 400 rounds a minute. It depends on the gun. It depends on a lot of things, but it's in that neighborhood. And you have to, you know, you have to take out the empty clip, you have to put in the new clip, you have to get reset up, so on and so forth. So this is not like you pull the trigger and for 8 minutes you do nothing but fire, you know, 300 rounds. Although it is kind of interesting because I gave you the estimate of 2,000 to 2,500 shots being necessary for 570 casualties. And 8 minutes at 300 rounds a minute is, wow, 2,400 shots. I mean, imagine that. Anyway, and I don't mean to, I hope I'm not wandering around here. I'm trying to give you a whole bunch of information that nobody else is giving you except in dribs and drabs and scattered locations. I'm trying to put it in one central spot on the Right Side Radio for you. So indulge me as I kind of go from point to point here and sometimes digress to give you some background on some of the points that you may not otherwise know so that you fully understand them. So you have you have all these discrepancies. Here's a question for you, and I don't know the answer to this. What happened between 11 minutes? Let's take the current official version of the events, different than the former versions. What happened between 11 minutes after he started shooting and after he stopped shooting? What happened from minute 12 to minute 72? What happened to the FBI? Where did they go? That would seem to me, this is a surmise. There's not even an article on this that I can point you to. 60 minutes would be about the right time to stage a room, move weapons around to seem like there's more weapons, and do whatever else you're going to do to take your photos. Don't you think? I mean, something happened in those 60 minutes. And I'm using the official version of the timeline now. This is not, you know, from some internet sleuth whose article I'm happening to read. Anyway, yet another, should we say, it increases the velocity of the breeze, which is making my red flags flap. Let me give you another little tidbit. There are a number of stories I posted, I think one or two, or I had the producers post one or two, once again, under either terror or gun control. There was a woman, and there's a number of witnesses, who was running around the actual concert site 45 minutes before, acting really strangely, in the company of another man, telling people and screaming at people that they're all around you. You are all going to effing die in 45 minutes. They are all around you. You are all going to effing die And this is not just one witness now. This is a number of witnesses. This is not a singular report. It's a number of reports with names of the witnesses. Now, maybe this gal was a clairvoyant. Maybe she was a prophet. Maybe she was high on acid. I doubt it. What about that? Then we have medical testimony. That's posted for you too, and you can also dial up on videos. They had a number of excellent interviews on any of the channels. The mainstream media, you know, some of the alternative media, it doesn't matter. The medical folks at the various hospitals, particularly that Trauma One Center, were just, well, they were unbelievable. You know, I mean, imagine the shock and awe of being a medical professional and being avalanched in a several-hour period with 570 horrific gunshot victims. I mean, it's really beyond comprehension. And they saved, I believe, all but 12 at last count. That's really phenomenal. I mean, my complete respect goes out to those doctors and those nurses and those hospital people. And by the way, all the first responders and all the ordinary Joe Blow citizens who pitched in, you know, doing all sorts of things in the field with triage, even though some of them didn't know what they were doing, they knew enough to try and stop the blood that saved a hell of a lot of lives. I digress. If you watch the videos of the chief surgeon of this trauma center, he says that, yes, he has seen many, 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 many gunshot trauma wounds in his career, which is decades, and that these were unusual because of the heavy caliber of the bullets and the way they twisted and turned when they struck a target. He even gave some examples of weird things that had happened in abdominal cavities because of these bullet effects he had never seen before and these heavier calibers and all that kind of stuff. Why am I telling you this? Because the bullets from the sole shooter that the authorities that we're supposed to believe, they've told us that they are primarily 223 rounds, which are light caliber bullets that travel fast and don't tumble normally. Tumbling, heavier caliber, dum-dum or tumbling bullets is what causes those, shall we say, weird wounds. You know, they go into your body and they go every which way but Sunday. But this guy was shooting 223s at 300 to 400 yards where they start losing energy. I'm sorry, those facts don't add up to me. Unless, of course, there was more than one shooter. In the set of articles that I have had posted below, once again, I'm sorry, I can't tell you under which they are, gun control or terror. And there's a number of them under both. There are a number of witnesses that say there is more than one shooter. There is an Iraq Army vet who happened to have the room below paddocks who swears that there were two shooters. This is a military professional. There are people from the concert who say there were at least two shooters. There are reports from the Belarius Hotel that there was a separate shooter at the Belarius and that there were bullets fired in the lobby. This is not just one person. This is not somebody kind of trying to post fake news. This is actual people. Some of them tweeting at the current time that the shooting was taking care of, was happening. There's a video in one of the articles, once again, the titles will tell you which ones it is, that was shot by a taxi cab driver driving a cab. No axe to grind whatsoever. In fact, in the end, he flees the scene because everything was so weird. He has pictures, and other people have pictures, of muzzle flashes from the fourth floor. Not from the 32nd floor. From the fourth floor of the Mandalay. Now, the authorities tried to explain this by saying, oh, it was reflections. Really? What? You take a look at the Mandalay, folks, and take a look at how the building is configured, and you tell me how you're going to get a reflection in one fourth-story window from a weapon being fired from a different angle of the same building on a different wing 28 stories above it. I'm sorry. You know, the breeze becomes the wind and the red flags fly ever harder. And if you listen to the audio, forget, you know, give these people the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, it was a reflection. It was some kind of weird angle of light and air, and it created this reflection and et cetera, et cetera. Never mind that the muzzle flashes from the fourth floor video, the video of the fourth floor muzzle flashes, do not sync with the sound of Paddock's gun at a much further distance. In other words, the reports of Paddock's gun are a different timing than the muzzle flashes from the fourth floor. You watch it for yourself. But most importantly, listen to the audio in this taxi cab, who was obviously freaking out, in this taxi cab driver's cell phone video. Listen to the audio of the gunshots. It is very distinct. And I knew, when I heard the first half of the first burst on Sunday night in the first videos that were coming out, I knew it was an automatic or accessorized slash converted semi-automatic to automatic weapon. It took the rest of the news media like 2 hours to figure that out. I mean, the first 10 shots you knew was an automatic. Listen to the audio in that taxi driver's video. You can clearly hear, in close proximity, i.e. fourth floor, above street level where the taxi cab is, a gun, and I'm not sure it's automatic. It might be semi-automatic, which is much more accurate than an automatic. You can hear a gun very close. And the gun is a different caliber, has a different sound, a heavier caliber than the gun that you can also hear firing in the same video, much further away, on full automatic. Listen for yourself. Maybe you'll think I'm crazy. Maybe my poor old Wyoming hayseed eyes or ears are going the same way as my poor old hayseed Wyoming eyes. But it's pretty clear to me that there were at least two shooters in this deal. And I don't care what the authorities we're supposed to believe are telling us. My eyes and ears don't lie. And it's not the first time I've heard those sounds. Let me keep going with some more here, which I want you to kind of check out on your own. So the girlfriend. Number one, the Philippines is, as you may or may not know, a hotbed of Islamic terror. In fact, an entire city in the southern Philippines recently came under ISIS / Al-Qaeda, whatever the local ISIS chapter is there, control. I mean, literally, a full town slash city of the Philippines is now being run by Muslim extremists. Kind of like a little mini caliphate. Kind of like a Mosul of the Philippines. His girlfriend is a Philippine. She was in the Philippines during this whole deal. Supposedly, he sent her there because he got a cheap plane ticket. You know, wait a second. This guy is a professional gambler. He's a multimillionaire. He owns all this property. He has spent over $100,000, $150,000 on weapons, tactical gear, and ammo. But he sent her to the Philippines because he got her a cheap ticket. Okay. And he wires her $100,000 that we know of to the Philippines, which she says he told her to buy a house with. Have any of the authorities checked and see if her family in the Philippines owns a house now? Has anybody checked to see what $100,000 will buy in the Philippines? Can you even buy a house for $100,000? In other words, has anybody from those authorities we're supposed to believe checked out the basic economics of the story of the $100,000? Has anybody checked out where the $100,000 is? Did it filter out to some Islamic group? What is the religion of the girlfriend? Is she a Christian? Is she a Muslim? Is she in between? Is she a Hindu? Is she a Jew? What is she? Now, this guy obviously decided, he started to turn toward the dark side sometime in the last year. Apparently, if you read these articles, he started going out with this gal in about the same time period. The same gal who's now saying, oh, you know, yeah, he was kind and gentle and a really nice man. But, you know, he did kind of act weird at night and shout and scream and couldn't sleep and all this kind of stuff. By the way, her own brother, who met Paddock, said that Paddock gave him the creeps. So the brother seems to have a completely different viewpoint of Paddock than the girlfriend. Here's what's more interesting. Antifa is everywhere, folks. There is Antifa in every Western country, including Australia. Australian Antifa, on their FB page, claimed that Paddock was one of theirs, quote unquote. The article is posted for you. In fact, I think the article includes a copy of their post. His girlfriend is from the Philippines. But his girlfriend, folks, is an Australian citizen. An Australian citizen. Be kind of interesting to see how she got into the United States or on what basis she was in the United States, don't you think? Do you kind of see how all these dots are revolving around flapping red flags here? Now, let me bring a few more dots here. So, on the more than one shooter, I'm pretty sure it's a certainty. We'll call it theory. How's that? There's a guy by the name of Jeff Renz who happens to agree with my analysis. I mean, he didn't quote me. He did his own analysis. He did an analysis of rate of fire versus people struck by bullets. According to him, I'm telling you from my experience, it's 300 to 400 rounds a minute. He said 360 rounds a minute could be fired at full burst auto with no magazine changes in the approximate 4 minutes or 240 seconds of the shooting. Quote, so Paddock didn't fire 360 rounds in 240 seconds because he had to stop and change the magazine, probably 30-round mags. That would be 13 magazine changes in 240 seconds. And it is reported he fired from both broken-out windows in the rooms. Survivors state there were shooting pauses, and that is when they were run. Let's say Paddock, this is still Renz, who's a professional, by the way, ballistics guy. Let's say Paddock managed to get off an amazing 300 rounds in 4 minutes or 240 seconds and hit someone with every round. Remember, there were 573 killed and wounded according to late statistics. Quote, who then fired off the other full auto 273 rounds without missing a single shot? There's another guy, another professional ballistics weaponry guy. I'll quote him. There's no way in hell that this inexperienced guy was able to hit 500-plus people at a downsloping range of approximately 250 to 350 yards using a makeshift weapon modified to shoot automatically. It was dark, and no matter how well lit, there were many shadows. Simple a seer, which, by the way, is pronounced seer, modification would have permitted one entire magazine to shoot all at once with no select fire. In other words, you pull trigger and you're committed. The magazine's going to fire. It can't stop it. Devices like autoglobe and bump fire that can simulate full automatic fire, but can't be. But they're not accurate or effective. If the shooter was somehow able to obtain a full, normal functioning automatic rifle, anyone with military experience can tell you the rifles are difficult to control when firing more than 3-round bursts, especially a 308 or AK-47 type. By the way, folks, that would be the heavier caliber the doctor was talking about. This is because the rifle will uncontrollably rise if automatic fire is constant. The next reason is, after 15 seconds, the crowd scattered and took cover. He also noticed, by the way, the lack of brass shells in the pictures. You know, this kind of reminds me, let me step back for a moment. Now, many of you listeners are, you weren't born until after the 1960s. I know I have a bunch of you listeners. So you do not remember the day John F. Kennedy was shot. I do. I was, I believe, 9 years old. I remember it clear as a bell. Absolutely, it is crystal clear in my mind. In that assassination, John Kennedy was struck by 3 bullets. That everybody agrees on. One through his throat. One, which they say hit Governor Connally, went in some weird course through his body, exited his wrist, and hit Kennedy. And then one in the back of the head. One right in the back of Kennedy's head. The authorities, whom we are supposed to believe, in that case, tried to tell us that a guy by the name of Lee Harvey Oswald, a lefty, by the way, communist, Lee Harvey Oswald, who was drummed out of the Marines, and who was a mediocre marksman at best in his brief Marine service, fired from an old Mauser action, bolt action rifle at a moving target, the motorcade, and a small target, basically the president's, you know, the top of his shoulders and his head. I mean, that's all you can see out of the back of a car. Without a rest, downslope at a steep angle, sixth floor to street level, at 200 yards, and managed to get off three rounds in 3.6 seconds, all of which hit a target. You know, folks, I'm a pretty good shot. I was once hunting boar, and I realize this is a slight digression from Las Vegas, but I'm trying to make a point here. I was once hunting boar in California with some friends, and a wild boar charged me from about 60 yards away. And I dropped to a sitting position with a Model 70 270, and I managed to get off three rounds, all of which hit the boar, and he died maybe 30 feet from me. And just to see how long it took me, after it had nothing to do with Kennedy or anything else, I was just curious. I looked up how fast a boar can run. We measured off the distance, and I got off three rounds from a Model 70, which is a smooth action rifle, from a sitting position, that is elbows on my knees with a rest, at a level target coming right at me in 3.8 seconds. Needless to say, my red flags are flying over the Kennedy deal, and my red flags are flying over this deal for much the same reasons. We are being asked to believe that 2 plus 2 is 5 and that water runs uphill. Now, let me continue here. And I'm going to start bringing this all together for you. Because ISIS claimed not once, but three times, that he was their guy. Antifa has claimed that Paddock was their guy. Paddock began to amass, he had weapons before, began to amass weapons around the time of Trump's election. The girlfriend is, she resides, I guess, in an area that is rife with Islamic terrorism. She is not an American citizen. Do you remember San Bernardino, where the fiancé from the Mideast ostensibly radicalized her hubby, and they went in and killed those people at the Christmas party? It's a successful ISIS operation. Kind of an MO. Use a woman to subvert a subject. ISIS insists that this guy converted to Islam 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago. They even have, and the articles are down below for you, neither terror or gun control. They even insist that he took on an Arab name, and they give the Arab name. Or a Muslim name, excuse me. So I'd like to know exactly how all this works. Right? I mean, if you take all these dots, if you take all these absolute facts, how many rounds a gun can fire, how likely rounds are to hit a target, how many shells there should be, where are the shells. I can go on and on. If you take the ISIS claims that this guy converted, that he was ISIS-inspired, if you look at the girlfriend's kind of shadowy, you know, we don't know much about it, but we know kind of she's from areas that are unsavory when it comes to Islamic terrorism. If you look at some other dots, which is, according to some of the leaks from the investigation, which have been carried by mainstream media, there was Antifa literature in the hotel room, Paddock's hotel room. And Antifa is taking credit just like ISIS is taking credit. And then you factor in one more thing. And the one more thing is the call for a communist revolution by Antifa on November 4th. I mean, some of you are shaking your head going, I think Reed's like over the deep end. You know, he must be snorting scotch whiskey or something. No, I'm not over the deep end. I'm going to have more on this next week for you. I have posted the articles below. You should kind of bone up on them. But there is, in fact, Antifa. And they are... I'll tell you what. You look right under the audio bar on the website and watch that video, which was shot undercover by Steven Crowder, of Antifa people planning and talking about weapons, AK-47s, everything else, and an uprising on November 4th. And you take a look at the groups that are involved with this, which include, because I'm going to talk more about this next week at rather great length, which include let's see. Okay, Antifa, Resist Fascism, the Revolutionary Communist Party, as just some of these alt-left, violent proposing groups. And what they plan for November 4th, all around the country. Quote, we will gather in the streets and public squares of cities and towns across the country. At first, many thousands declaring that this whole regime is illegitimate, and that we will not stop until our single demand is met. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. Our protests must grow day after day, night after night, thousands becoming hundreds of thousands, and then millions, determined to act to put a stop to the grave danger that the Trump-Pence regime poses to the world by demanding that this whole regime be removed from power. Our actions will reflect the values of respect for all of humanity and the world we want, in stark contrast to the hate and bigotry of the Trump-Pence fascist regime. Our determination to persist and not back down will compel the whole world to take note. Every force and faction in the power structure would be forced to respond to our demand. The cracks and divisions amongst the powers already evident today will sharpen and widen. As we draw more and more people to stand up, all this could lead to a situation where this illegitimate regime, is removed from power. Spread the word and organize now. Be a part of making history. Don't let it be said that you stood aside when there was still a chance to stop a regime that imperils humanity and the earth itself. Join in taking to the streets and the public squares day after day, night after night, demonstrating that in the name of humanity we will refuse to accept a fascist America. Now they go on. I mean, it's just unbelievable with an alternate North American Constitution and all sorts of other stuff, and a clear call to violence. You can see it right in the video, never mind this article. And they name names. And by the way, these outfits are funded, I want you to know. And this was in the Washington Beacon. George Soros, through his Open Society Foundation, I've talked about many times, put it in the search bar. He has given them $1.75 million. W.K. Kellogg, you know, Kellogg, the cereal, Foundation, $3 million. California Endowment, $524,000. The Ford Foundation, wow, this is unbelievable. The Ford Foundation, $2,350,000. And Hillary Clinton, $800,000. This is a real deal, folks. These people are funded. And they are organized. They have a leader. I'm going to tell you about him next week. He's been their leader since the 70s. He was in the SDS, along with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. And all things come full circle. All things come full circle. So I'm going to wrap this up for you. I've given you a million factoids here. A million things to think about. A million discrepancies and anomalies and, you know, straight math, firearms logistics and all sorts of things. I've posted scores of articles for you, which in turn have hundreds of additional links that I urge you to take a look at. So this is my hypothesis. Stephen Paddock was Antifa. The Antifa claim that he was their man is correct. Antifa does not have the technical ability. They do not have the experience in planning this type of attack. Although they were all behind it because it's a month, think about it, a month ahead of their quote-unquote planned revolution in the streets. And it sows the seeds of division and all the things they're looking to do to impose their communist regime. I mean, I'm not making this up. I've posted the article for you. I'm going to talk more about it next week. I wish I was making it up. And they turned, or he turned, or they and he turned to ISIS. Maybe through the girlfriend, maybe not. I don't know. Because they needed ISIS's logistical support. They needed ISIS's terror knowledge. They needed ISIS's help in planning what Antifa wanted to pull off as kind of the fermenting seeds of what they have planned in their little, you know, out in the universe minds for November 4th. And I realize all this sounds just like stranger than truth. But I don't think it is. I think ISIS is correct. I think he was their man. And I think Antifa is correct. He was their man. I think it is another demonstration yet again of that unholy alliance between the alt-left and radical Islam, whose joint enemy is the United States Constitution, Americans' faith, family, and values, and capitalism. And I think that this was so well planned, so well executed, that one of the reasons authorities are having a hard time, they say, in finding any online records for this guy who owned lots of real estate, had lots of money, planes and everything else, but somehow he doesn't have any online presence, is that they've been working at scrubbing it. I mean, how many times have the mainstream media blabbed their mouth about how this link and that link and everything else was on social media and that's how they tracked it down? I mean, how many times do you have to be told this if you're an enemy of the United States to cover your tracks? Not that many. Antifa may be scum, but they're not dumb. ISIS may be barbarian scum, but they're not dumb. So I think that Stephen Paddock was a product of both. Maybe in a lot of ways the first of his kind. The unholy twin of the mating of the alt-left and radical Islam. time will tell if I'm correct. It's a hypothesis based on all these many, 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 some conflicting dots that I've shared with you and that there is even more of down below in these articles. But I want you to give it some thought. Because if true, if even partly true, then our society, our values, America as we know it, the Constitution and our freedoms, is under more of a threat than any of us thought it was prior. And I know many of us have known it to be under threat for some time. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.